Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man, I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Madison, Oklahoma, Bangalore, Baltimore, Sacramento, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, Santa Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Dallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chickasee.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey. Thanks again for getting us on the show. And I think this is, what, 3 or 4 weeks with the new console and the new system with Blog Talk Radio. And we had one glitch a couple of weeks ago, and I think everything is working fine. So thank you very much, Audrey. We couldn't do it without you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network. And I'm Keith Haley, the host of the Jumble Justice Radio Show. And we want to thank Johnny Cash again for taking us on that trip across the United States, where he travels to 90 different cities and states. And I'm sorry to say, as I was listening carefully, that he does not go to Dallas. And that will be disappointing to our guest tonight, but maybe we can get Johnny when he's up there trucking up in heaven to make a detour and be sure that he hits Dallas sometimes. Emily and Mike, thanks for joining us tonight again. Your research for the show, we appreciate that very much. And ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of our show is the same as it always is. We discuss the news, issues, events, people, and developments, and the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And our show is, of course, dedicated to those energetic and tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. What we try to do on this show, folks, is look inside criminal justice practice, and we take a look at the professionals and see what's up with them on a weekly basis. We do the show once a week, and it lasts 1 hour. And somebody affectionately called us the NPR of criminal justice, and we'll accept that as a compliment. Let me say something about the Blog Talk Radio Network, which I do virtually every week. Blog Talk Radio is a leading-edge technology that is developed by Alan Levy. He's the chief executive officer of Blog Talk Radio and the genius and the man behind the medium. And we're up to the point now where Blog Talk Radio has, we used to say hundreds of shows, but now they literally have thousands of shows. And if you go to the Blog Talk Network and search either by genre or topic, there are dozens of genres. And our show is, we put it under politics, but it could just as easily be under law or a couple of those other categories. You're going to find names of people that you are very, very familiar with that have their own shows, politicians, entertainers, et cetera. And it's surprising sometimes the people that will call into your show. So we did a show once on gangster rap, and had some major producers of that particular medium of entertainment call into the show, and others, of course, have done the same. But let me mention what's possible on the Blog Talk Radio Network. One of the things that you can do, any person, any interest group, any organization, and that can be from darts to homicide investigation, from cigars to astronomy, you can have your own show broadcasting live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide. Are you ready for this? To an unlimited number of listeners, and it's absolutely free. And you can broadcast as much as 14 hours, or maybe more than that now, but it used to be 14 hours a week. We choose to do one, but there are some folks that have a daily show. Some of the political shows are like that, and some of the people that are pushing a book have a show that's on each day. So it's all possible, and if you messed around with this in the 1990s and late 1990s, if you had a radio network on the Internet, you could probably send your show out to maybe 50 listeners, and then it wouldn't work correctly. But here you can broadcast worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. What a service, and it's absolutely free. So if you don't like this show, you don't like some of the ones that you see on Blog Talk Radio, and you've listened to them, I always say get your own show, because you can do it. Tonight's show is going to be a very special treat. It's a topic that's close to my heart, and I'm committed to doing a book on the whole issue of surveillance cameras, government and private, and what that means for our society, both the pros and the cons. But our guest tonight is Danny Chandler. He's Director of Security for the Meadows Foundation in Dallas. Very interesting organization that has a marvelous record of achievement in terms of urban reconstruction and rebuilding of neighborhoods in Dallas, Texas. And her subject tonight will be police and private security camera surveillance. And Mr. Chandler is going to have a lot to say about that subject here tonight. Let me tell you quickly what you can do. You can listen to the show on the computer, which you may be doing now, on Windows Media Player. Or you can actually call in the show number if you would like to listen to it on the phone or talk with us. And the call-in number is 347-996-5983. Audrey's told you before. I'll tell you one more time. It's 347-996-5983. And what happens, we can hold five calls at a time on the switchboard, and all of us can talk to each other and can hear the show. And in case you're wondering, I actually broadcast the show from a cell phone, and I click it on speakerphone, and away it goes. And when you hear the thing played back on audio, our shows are always archived within maybe 30 minutes or less after they're after they're aired. You can hear the whole show, and Alan Levy's secret is coming up with a sound quality that is rare in this type of business. So take a look at some of those shows. And we're going to go ahead and click on our guest tonight. I think he's already on the show. And maybe have him do a little commentary on a couple news stories. And Audrey, yes, we'll let him listen to your joke. Hold on just a second. Hello. Is this Danny?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes. How are you doing? How's everything in Dallas this evening?
Much cooler, thank you.
Oh, good. But I can imagine, I remember those wonderful evenings in Dallas, Texas, when the sun goes down. And what a time for a convertible, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's really the best time of the year here in Dallas.
Yeah, I've noticed that October, it really begins to change. And I don't know if we were chatting. One of the things I used to do, I think I've done it four times, I used to ride the Wichita Falls Hotter Than Hell 100. And that's where you do 100 miles on a bike, about 15,000 people start and only about half finish, and they have full showers at about mile 80 or 82. And that'll really make you appreciate 98-degree weather.
Oh, absolutely. And the humidity to match that.
Right. Oh, yes, I love that. Boy, is that different where I am. I think things are mildewing and molding right in front of me as I talk. But anyway, Danny, one of the things that we do on the show, and we'll get your formal introduction here in just a moment, is we let Audrey tell a blonde joke. And Audrey's from England, and she is a blonde. So I will point out that she agrees to this thing. We're not denigrating blondes necessarily, but she's been a collector of blonde jokes since she was a child. And every week she does a blonde joke, and she was worried about this one again tonight. Last week she was afraid it was a morbid one because it had to do with a traffic accident. This one this week also has to do with a death, but checked it out, and I think it's okay. We'll play the joke and see what you think. Audrey, you said? Okay, put the coffee cup down. All right, here we go.
Professor Haley, I do not want to be morbid with this blonde joke this evening, but this one is funny to me. I checked it out with Emily and Mike and they thought it was not inappropriate. Sally goes to work one morning crying her eyes out. Her boss, concerned about his employee, walks over to her and asks sympathetically, "What's the matter?" The blonde replies, "Early this morning I got a phone call that my mother had passed away." The boss, feeling very sorry at this point, suggests to the young girl, "Why don't you go home for the day? We aren't terribly busy. Just take the day off and go relax." Sally very calmly states, "No, I'd be better off here. I need to keep my mind busy, and I have the best chance of doing that here." The boss agrees and allows her to work as usual. "If you need anything, just let me know," says the boss. A few hours pass and the boss decides to check on Sally. He looks out his office and sees her crying hysterically. He rushes over and asks, "What's the matter now? Are you going to be okay?" Sally breaks down in tears. "I just received a horrible call from my sister. She said that her mom died too."
Like that one. That's a good one. Danny, we always start out with a couple, three news stories here, and I thought this was an interesting one. One that has a little play on your topic here for tonight. But I love the British police and some of the things that they get themselves involved in. But I don't know if you've seen this story, but says that a thief over there stolen a life-size cardboard cutout of a policeman that was intended to deter shoplifters at one of their supermarkets. The police say that the cardboard cutout is a replica of an actual replica of police constable Bob Malloy, had been doing a great job of deterring shoplifters in Long Eaton, Derbyshire. The cheeky thief paid for his groceries at the co-op store and then waltzed off with the life-size PC Malloy tucked under his arm. He said that the Derbyshire police may have the last laugh, as the theft was captured on CCTV cameras, and they are confident of making an arrest. Of course, you know, Great Britain has more cameras per capita than any other nation in the world, but thefts had fallen from 36 per month to just one using PC Malloy's 2D presence, and it was introduced 2 years ago, and the police believe the theft may have been actually an act of revenge. The cutout costs about 100 pounds, and it's been rotated between stores between a couple of the cities of Roper and Long Eaton. It shows Police Constable Malloy in full uniform and with his arms folded. They said that it actually looks so lifelike that shoplifters have even tried to engage the cardboard copper in conversation. Inspector Andy, and he says, "We're using the cutaway as a way of engaging more with the local community, so it is a bit disappointing that we've lost him." He says, "We are pursuing some lines of inquiry, and we hope to have some good news soon." Is there any place that you know of where they've made actual replicas of real cops?
Well, you know, here in the States, you know, they've put some decoy cars, and they've put up some mannequins in the cars. And then in years past, here in Dallas, we had what they called a shotgun squad at some convenience stores, where officers would hide in the back during holidays, and then they would come out and deal with the perpetrators. And then years after that, they would take a officer's coat and hang it in different convenience stores like 7-Elevens, etc., stop and goes. And that would kind of keep the criminal element back on their heels, not knowing if there was somebody in the back room.
I have never heard of that. Very interesting idea. So there's a lot to this, I imagine. But, yeah, I've seen near where we live up here on the way to Toledo. There's a sheriff's department that sets a car in an old filling station lot and sets a mannequin up in there, and then people always take notice of it. And then across the street, or across the street and down the road just a little bit, is a place called the Speed Trap Cafe. And it's a Dairy Queen and coffee shop and things like that. But, well, Danny, let's go ahead and get to your subject. And can you tell us a little bit about your background? I know it's been extensive, and I know something today that I found out about you that I wanted to mention, if you don't. But how long have you been in law enforcement and related areas?
Well, I was in law enforcement for 32 years. I started out as a deputy with the Dallas County Sheriff's Department and rose through the ranks and completed my career there as chief deputy. Along the way, I attended the FBI National Academy, Drug Unit Commander Academy. I belonged to several organizations, and my last position there with the sheriff's office, I commanded almost 1,000 people.
Wow, yeah. And I think folks that don't know probably we ought to say that when you're the chief deputy, that you're the chief of police, right? You run.
Well, you have an elected official who is your boss, and someone who's got to take care of home base while they're out taking care of their constituents.
Very good. And today you mentioned to me that you've been doing a little work for a while with the Texas Ranger Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm 2 years ago I was nominated and confirmed. I'm on the Texas Ranger Association Foundation Board of Directors, and I've been associated with that group now for 2 years, and it's been quite an enjoyable experience.
I have Introduction to Criminal Justice book that I co-authored with Bob Mohm with McGraw-Hill, and we have a nice little section in there about the Texas Rangers Hall of Fame, and I think I wrote that section largely motivated by having the chance to go to the museum in Waco several times. So it's a place to see, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and the Rangers are to Texas what the Mounties are to Canada.
Exactly, right. I love the Rangers' motto, isn't it? One riot, one ranger? Something like
that. Absolutely. Absolutely. They were formed by an individual you may have heard of, Stephen F. Austin, mm-hmm. who the city of Austin was named after and died at the Alamo.
Yeah, right. Boy, Texas is loaded with so much history, and I really enjoyed, you know Mark Stallow.
Yes.
He and I did a couple books down there about, one was called Texas Crime, Texas Justice, the other was called Crime and Punishment in the Lone Star State, and it's a fascinating place to live, and I intend to get back there someday. all right, well, what about, what's your current position then? What do you do then with the Meadows Foundation? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what Meadows does.
After retiring from Dallas County, I came to work here about 2.5 years ago, and I'm director of security. For 23 years prior to my retirement, I worked off-duty here at the Meadows Foundation.
Oh,
we're here in East Dallas, very close to downtown, and the Meadows Foundation utilizes about 40 off-duty officers to work part-time here, both Dallas police officers and Dallas sheriff's deputies, to work here in what we refer to as the Wilson District, which is an enclave here in East Dallas, which is generally bordered by businesses and older homes and new construction. However, our district's kind of the antithesis of East Dallas. While East Dallas is kind of associated with crime and older homes and poverty, the district generally enjoys a reputation of prosperity and hospitality, mm-hmm. both which are directly supported by our security here. So I'm director of security, and they also allow me to act as a liaison with the law enforcement community.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds as if you're back in charge of another police department, right?
Well, it's a police department that any police chief in the country would be envious of, because on average, our officers that work here have generally 18 years of experience.
Wow. Excellent.
Most of them have undergraduate degrees, and many have masters. And in Mark's case, you know, he's Stallo. You know, he's working on his doctorate.
I think he's presenting a dissertation proposal next week, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm going to be right proud to call him Dr. Stallo.
Right. I don't know if I want to be around him this week, though, getting ready for that.
best natured individuals I've ever met.
Certainly is, and we enjoyed, you probably told you, that our little trips to Romania, he went over there and taught the folks some crime analysis business, and did a good job with that. Well, what part does, first of all, what's the activity like there in terms of, you run into criminals, I suspect, right?
Well, let me kind of describe a little bit about the Metis Foundation and what we're bordered by, and we're here in, again, in an enclave of East Dallas. And it generally falls between two reporting districts with the Dallas Police Department. And for the last quarter, in these reporting districts, there were 1,368 Part 1 offenses that were reported, which is about a 10.5% increase from the previous year. Those crimes include burglary of motor vehicles, theft, unauthorized use of a motor vehicle or stealing cars, and it goes all the way down to sexual assault, robbery of businesses. But if you map out that crime, right, it looks like a starburst, because right in the center is the Wilson Historic District, which is about 22 acres here that we provide security for here in the East Dallas. We're bordered by a entertainment district that's called Deep Ellum. In that area that is frequented in the past by skinheads. And then we have several recycling centers that are close to us, three as a matter of fact, which causes a lot of homeless people to transverse our property. Mm-hmm. And then just on our border we have a couple of gay establishments. And as you know from your criminal justice background, is when you start mixing skinheads and gays, you know, that can be a storm front.
And volatile.
Very. And then in the past we've had sexually oriented businesses all around us. And I'm proud to say that in the 25 years that we've been here, last month was our 25th anniversary here in East Dallas, that we've not had one crime committed against a single individual. Now, we've had purses stolen and occasional car broken into, but we've not had one crime committed against a single individual in those 25 years.
Wow, that's a remarkable record, isn't it? Wow. How many people would probably work in that area?
When we started here, it was in September of 1982. It was an industrial district, and at sundown, the area would more or less be like a ghost town. Well, we'd like to think, because of us in a border that's a hospital that's contiguous to us, Bader Hospital, that this area has seen a resurgence, and it's starting to repopulate with young professionals, and we have a light rail train station that's under construction, that's right on our outer perimeter. And this area is really changing. What we're looking at here at one of our nonprofit agencies, which we have 39 here in the Meadows Wilson District, is our Center for Community Cooperation, which is a meeting center. And they have approximately 40,000 people a year that come there for meetings during the day and evenings. And what we have, of the 40 officers that we have three on duty almost at all times. One in our control center that opens and controls gates electronically, monitors our cameras. And then we have two out in cars that rove the property.
I see. Wow. And it's 22 acres, right?
About 22 acres, or approximately 19 city blocks.
19 city blocks. My, and folks, I can tell them if they look on the website for the Metis Foundation, you have a nice video there about the restored district. And, boy, those are really some impressive homes, aren't they?
They really are. They date back to the founding family called the Wilsons of 1890, and the homes are registered in the National Archives as being historically restored.
Mm-hmm. What was sort of the history of security? How did that develop with the Wilson District there? You didn't start with surveillance equipment and just used patrol officers? And...
Well, 25 years ago, before the Meadows moved back here to East Dallas, they were quartered in an office building about 5 miles from here, and they were approached by the Historic Preservation League to come in here and to reclaim these abandoned houses of the Wilson family. A set of bankers that lived here in the original block or homestead in 1890. And what their proposal was to the Meadows Foundation was to refurbish these homes, relocate their business offices here, and make the other houses that were not occupied available to nonprofits. Well, our board and our president at the time felt like that we needed to come in here and to establish our authority, and without security it would not be available, would not be possible. And the rest is history. We've gone from one block to almost 19 city blocks now. So we started off with one officer working one block perpetually. And then about a year and a half into our program here, we started off with your typical small 9-inch black and white monitors as a force multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we've evolved now. We have approximately 28, or actually 32 cameras that are color day-night, color during the day, black and white at night during low light, that are recorded with the DVR. And it has just been an outstanding enhancement to our program here.
And you see these mainly as, you probably see them having multiple purposes, but they've worked for you in terms of detection and apprehension?
And deterrent.
And deterrence, preventing crime.
One of the grants that the foundation allowed me to work on when I first came on board full-time was with the Dallas Police Department to work with them about cameras for the Central Business District there in Dallas. And it was an $840,000 grant for 40 cameras at 31 locations. And the history that we had here was most beneficial in standing up that program, because we've been very successful here with our cameras, as I mentioned to you about the 1,368 Part 1 offenses that occurred all around us with very, very few within the district. Well, the Dallas Police Department, when they stood their cameras up the first 90 days that they put their cameras up in the core of downtown, they had a 32% reduction in crime.
Wow.
And in 6 months, it dropped a little bit, but they still showed a 9% decrease in crime in the first 6 months downtown, which shows that, it was not an anomaly here with our camera system supported by officers. Without follow-up, it's just not going to work.
That's happened in cities across the country, hasn't it? They just sort of put them up, and the only time they ever look at them is if they have a crime, and they go back and look for the recording. You mentioned something that I think was really important and significant to I guess they call it collective efficacy or something, where you feel that a community is safe, and that draws people in to invest and build. And
absolutely.
Business. It sounds like you are a real magnet for a catalyst for that particular area.
I traveled to Los Angeles a number of years ago to look at their blue line or red line out there, their light rail train system out there. And basically what they said there is the same thing I saw in Tel Aviv, Israel, when I was there about 3 years ago. If people don't feel safe, they will not ride the train or ride the buses.
Right.
Same thing here in the district. Being a volunteer-based organization here and with our 39 tenant agencies, the number one thing they say is, if it's not safe, our volunteers will not come here.
Yeah, I'm sure you won't say it, but we certainly don't want you to reveal any secrets. But is the philosophy of using the cameras there is to make them visible, or a combination of visible and
semi-visible? All our cameras are visible. We don't have any covert cameras.
Okay.
We feel like, and it parallels what we did with the city parallels what we do here. One is you have to have active monitoring. You have to have someone monitor the cameras. If you're only going to look at them post-event, they're going to do you, you know, your results are going to be very much diminished. So you've got to have someone to look at them. You have to have somebody to respond to them. And right. And they have to be out where people can see them.
I'm just wondering, in the cities, I know Cincinnati started their system, and they were going to use volunteers. And the volunteers either had to come to a district police station and do the monitoring, mm-hmm. or they go to this company, I think it was called City Watch. Mm-hmm. Eventually it fell off because they couldn't get people to stay up with it, the volunteers.
That was the original concept that the Dallas proposed to us when they approached us with a grant, that they were going to use light duty personnel that were out, injured, pregnant, et cetera. Or they were going to, you know, they were going to move it from station to station, because their system is a wireless system, and it's on a 4.9 gigahertz, which is a public safety frequency only, and it feeds over the internet. So you don't have to be in a static location. You can move it to another location if need be, and it is. It's monitored by at their police communications, and then it's also stood up in other places as needed. Well, we insisted that it be monitored full time by trained personnel, that you develop adequate policies, that people are trained, and you don't have a fruit basket turnover on who's using the cameras. And also this information would be disseminated out to the bureaus. So if you had an assault that occurred downtown, the Crimes Against Persons Bureau would know where those cameras are and what their field of view was, and they could go back and review the recorded history. Their cameras have a recorded history of 14 days. Ours, it has 30.
Mm-hmm. I see. But your monitors there, they can control the cameras in terms of panning and zooming?
Handheld zoom, yes.
Uh-huh. My gosh.
Huh. Yes, and they can be motion activated. So if you have motion that goes across a field, they also have tours, so it may have a particular tour. But if you have motion within that field of view, it'll go back to that preset point.
So tours where you've got five or X number of checkpoints that it runs through in a certain period of time?
Yes.
Yeah.
But we have override capability on those tours also.
And all 32 of them, they all operate at the same time?
Yes. We started off with a 9.5-inch or 9-inch monitors that are black and white, and we ventured out. We have a lot of corporations here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we went out and met with at a nationally known corporation, and they had monitors that were 32-inch television monitors, color. And we came back and talked to our wires and pliers guy about, hey, can we do that? And, you know, we heard all that. Well, you know, we can't do that. And we said, well, why don't you jump in the car and we'll show you who's doing it, and let's just go replicate it. And we came back, and about 10, 12 years ago, we stood up our monitors. Now are on full-size screen. It takes up an entire 11 by 13 wall of cameras, and we're able to go full screen, quad, or multiples within that.
Isn't that something?
Monitor.
That must be something to see. Can you tell us about some of the cases where this has worked for you, besides the prevention and deterrence? Some of the apprehension issues that have occurred?
Sure. You know, again, with the homeless persons that kind of traveled through our property, we had one recently where one was stealing sprinkler heads. And we were able to capture that person, removing the sprinkler heads, because the officers, you know, we have more officers per square inch than probably any place in the United States. So we were on him pretty quick. And
what the hell is he doing with a sprinkler head?
They're copper.
Okay, they're copper.
We have a lot of metal thefts here with copper. With the market price of copper now, we have a lot of metal thefts here in Dallas. We had an incident for damage. You know, we have from time to time we have someone that backs into a landscape truck, for instance, and they'll want to know whether we can pull the recording up to, you know, kind of find fault or for, you know, fact finding. We had one 2 weeks ago where a gentleman was walking down the street and jumped over one of our fences, and our officers gave pursuit, and he dropped a bag over in our bushes here. Come to find out, he's a capital murder suspect.
Oh,
And so we were able to capture that. We had an incident within the last month where a wrecker entered our property, and the bumper caught one of the call boxes at one of the gates and knocked it down. So we had documented evidence to seek out the wrecker company for damages on our property. We had one recently. We have a Latino Cultural Center that's contiguous to our property. We showed a vehicle last year that came down the street, turned its headlights off. We saw them. They drove up about a block. The pastor gets out of the car, kneels down on his knees, and he puts on a ski mask, and he takes a bag, and he walks across the street to the Latino Cultural Center. You see our officer, you know, he's dispatched immediately to go over there and to check that out. And you can see the suspect on the ground bolt in front of the two cars, jumps in the car with his bag, and the suspect vehicle backs up almost two city blocks with its lights off into a heavily trafficked intersection and drives away. We have all that documented.
Unbelievable. It must be fun to monitor that, particularly with that super-sized screen where you can go to that thing. It's not exactly in your eyes, is it?
Well, we looked at some studies a number of years ago about the attention span, too. We try to cycle our officers out every 2 hours.
Oh, I see.
And to kind of keep them fresh. And also, one of the things that they do when they first enter for their tour of duty, they cycle the cameras throughout the property, and that more or less documents, like a pass-on book, you inherited the books. How did you inherit the property? And then as you leave at the end of your tour of duty, you cycle the cameras throughout the property to document how you left the property. So in other words, not on my watch.
Uh-huh. Very interesting. Any resistance to that idea?
It has mixed opinions about whether that's the thing to do. I like it from the standpoint of, again, you have documented fields of view no later than 8 hours.
Do you ever get any comments from the folks? I assume most of the work activity is there during the regular business day, correct?
We're pretty busy because one of our tenant agencies is the Suicide Crisis Center, and it's staffed 24/7. So we have volunteers going in and out of that. We have a public track that people can come and walk in on the track up until midnight, and it closes till 5 a.m., and then we have a dog park, an off-leash dog park. So we have cleaning crews that come in. They're here till 1 or 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty busy most of the time.
Does anyone or has anyone ever complained about being watched? Do you read about that all the time where people are complaining? No?
That was one of the things that we insisted the police department do to complete for their grant was to develop a comprehensive policy to make sure that privacy issues that were dealt with.
Mm-hmm. And the next step in this seems to be the software that reads different. I was on I chaired like a national panel at one of our Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences meetings. It was on surveillance and. One of the Brits came over for that, and they were talking about this software that reads problems. In other words, if you set a suitcase at a train station and walk away from it, it reads that. And now the Brits are into actually reading facial expressions and listening for special sounds, you know, that might indicate terrorism or some sign of trouble. And a lot of this sounds like science fiction, but... I guess they're experiencing success with it, and they are experiencing a climbing crime rate, by the way. I think they've finally noticed one of the negative benefits of rapid immigration.
Well, and there's no substitution for officer in uniform.
Exactly, right, and that's what the research shows. There's a nice study that I was looking at a couple of days ago. It was one of the cop studies that sort of runs through the whole surveillance business, and it talked about that same thing. If you don't have police officers to respond, this is essentially useless.
Absolutely.
Now, is Dallas working with is their system working where they have the officers in the cars can
Yes, it's part of a separate grant was that they upgraded their mobile digital computers in their cars, so a responding officer can see on their in-car terminal the same thing the monitor is looking at back at the police communications as they approach a crime scene.
That's amazing, isn't it? And then, how prevalent is that in Dallas? I mean, is that like just in the downtown area?
Yes, sir. They're just standing up that technology, and a lot of it's still on the drawing board, but that's their goals, is be able to stand that up. And, of course, ultimately they want to try to link together some of the private sector, too, just as they've done in the Brits have done.
That was one of my questions about linking up the two. What are some of the complications in doing that?
Well, you have to, you know, it goes to interoperability, communications. You have to be able to get systems that are on different wavelengths, et cetera, to work together. And then, too, there's a saturation. There are so many cameras, as we saw in Oklahoma City after the McVeigh bombing up there. There are so many cameras. But since 9/11, you know, so many people are in lockstep now and doing things together and speaking with one voice, et cetera. So that it's really moving along.
Mm-hmm. I've sort of poked fun at this, but I understand deep down what people are talking about. But it's kind of become a political thing too. I mean, you know, the mayor of Chicago and Mayor Bloomberg, and they're in sort of a race now. And we've actually created what they're saying is a surveillance camera gap. Mayor Bloomberg in New York was over in Great Britain last week, I think, or week 2 weeks ago, and he was talking about how envious he was that London had all of these cameras, and he was going to work to try to catch up with them. And then Paris is worried that they're not as prevalent as they are in London. And I think Chicago is probably the place in the United States that's gone the farthest with this. Would you say that, or do you happen to know?
We looked at Chicago while we were doing the workup for our camera grant here, as well as Minneapolis in Los Angeles and New Orleans, and this was New Orleans was pre Katrina and Rita hurricanes, and you'll be surprised how advanced the Dallas Police Department is, especially by those guys standing their system up on the 4.9 gigahertz public safety frequency. We had heard that Chicago could pick up noises such as gunshots, etc., and they could pinpoint it, whatever. We didn't quite find that out when we got to our fact finding.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I remember a gunfire sensor study being done in Dallas, wasn't it? And the conclusion was that there was too much gunfire.
Absolutely. The technology is probably there, but we haven't made it work yet.
I saw something interesting in the news here this past week about the Dallas Police Department. As you know, we're finally coming out with the crime rates for 2006, and Dallas found out that their crime was escalating a little bit, and compared to some of the other large cities. But Dallas also pointed out that, or someone else pointed out that they were being more honest than other places.
Oh, absolutely. Dallas has absolutely reported crime, and our citizens come forth and report crimes, too. And the police department probably needs to speak to that. I'm only speaking from open sources.
Yeah.
Yes, they've been very straightforward with their crime reporting.
Have you had I'm thinking of these three types, what they call the overt system, where it's out in the public and people know that it's there, and then they have some that are sort of semi-covert, where it's one-way vision from the camera out, and then the others are covert hidden cameras. And I'm reading, and it seems like the putting them out in the open is the best, unless it's for some type of intelligence surveillance or something like that. Would that be your feeling?
Well, that's been our experience here. And when I was in Tel Aviv, Israel, in July, August of 2004, they obtained their cameras as a result of the Pope, Paul, visiting those guys. And they pointed out the examples of where the crime was, and most of their crime was outside the view of the cameras. in the public knew where the, you know, where the camera view stopped.
Okay. So that would be a case then to hide some of them, right?
It could be. It depends on the application.
Okay.
Part of the conditions for our grant with the police department was to sign downtown that they were entering a crime-free zone and that they were being actively monitored.
Most of this being paid by, or at least a substantial sum being paid by Homeland Security funds, grants?
Well, the $840,000 for the city of Dallas was for the equipment and the installation of their cameras. It was paid by us as a grant. Now the monitors were the year one was paid by most of the large law firms in the Central Business District of Dallas.
Oh, I'll be. Huh.
Because the reoccurring cost at today's wages and benefits, it doesn't take long to run the ticket up that your personnel cost far exceeds your equipment cost.
I can imagine. What's it take? What happens at night? Does anything change between day and night?
Here, our cameras. Again, we have day-night cameras here in the Wilson District, and during the day, the because of the lighting, the cameras are in color, or the monitors are in color, and then after dark, they go to a low light or a black and white picture that we have. We've had to position the cameras based on we have a lot of period street lighting. We had to make sure our cameras were not close to those, or you get a halo effect. Sometimes you get the starburst.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain cameras that we lose at night, and that's where the officers come into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's up for these? Is it something that you have standard preventive maintenance that these things go through, or you just wait till they break down, or what?
We have a full-time techie that takes care of our cameras, and then we have a reporting system here for maintenance, and that's his first thing that he does every morning. He comes in and checks our cameras, and then they have to clean the lens because of the weather, and then we have tree issues. We've had our arborist here the last month trimming trees.
Mm-hmm. When Dallas first started with their systems, were they in favor, or did they offer a lot of publicity to the public that they were doing this?
Yes, it was presented to the Public Safety Committee. There was a little bit of pushback from the ACLU types. They came back, and that's where the policies came into play, and they were very satisfied with those, with the policies. And to my knowledge, it's been virtually complaint-free since it was stood up in January.
I think the consensus from what I've read about this and some people I've talked to is that the publicity helps to establish the feeling that it sounds Orwellian, but you want people to know that they're being watched. I mean, that's part of the deterrent factor, right?
Yes, and we had a number of the members of the news media approach us about what are the camera locations, and they said, well, you know, you're going to have to get that from the police department. The police department's not telling them where the locations are. You know, they're all up on poles, and they have Dallas police badges, decals on the side of the cameras, but I don't think anyone specifically knows, the public doesn't specifically know where all 40 cameras are.
Mm-hmm. And you have...
It works in our favor.
You've probably heard of the surveillance camera players in New York, where they go around and take people on tours.
Yes, sir.
The cameras. What's the most unusual thing that you found out about this? I mean, what's the strangest reaction people have had, or any anomalies that you've come across since you've been doing this?
They've all been positive. And of course, what we have to rely on, too, is that being in the inner city, we have quite a few little brownouts and power surges that you can't over-rely on the cameras.
Uh-huh.
And that's the difference between having a trained monitor versus someone that's police background. You really need somebody there that knows how to use the cameras and not misuse them,
mm-hmm.
and know the difference between salt and sugar when they see something.
Mm-hmm. Now, Britain has the system where if you take off in your car,
mm-hmm.
is monitored by cameras. You probably know a lot more about that than I do, but it actually photographs your car, the cars that are around you, and all that business, and they claim that any car that moves is actually being photographed. Is that something like the city of Dallas is planning to do, or are these other cities working towards something like that too?
They probably need to address that.
Okay, yeah. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? That everything will be covered. And of course, Britain has the talking cameras. Any of those in Dallas or in your place?
No, that was discussed. And of course, I think you can go back to and look at some of the Super Bowls and what they've done with biometrics.
Yes, right.
With the facial recognition. And, you know, it's moved on. I know I'm talking to Noah about high water, but what we've done with fingerprints has now been, you know, rolled over to with the biometrics with facial features.
Right. That's incredible, isn't it? That's really something. What do you think this is going, just, you know, off the cuff, or what do you think this is going privacy-wise? Is there any issue for people, you know, generally, I guess we look at the Katz versus the U.S. decision 19, you know, you don't, mm-hmm. if you expect privacy, you should get it, but it's unreasonable to expect it standing out in public yep. in the middle of nowhere, I guess.
Right. A person has no reasonable expectation of privacy if they're in a public place,
mm-hmm.
either to their image or their property. And what we've all seen is from nanny cams now, that are transmitted over wirelessly and or through the internet to a person's business or to their PDA, that and what we've seen here in Dallas is once the cameras went into the Central Business District, we've had other neighborhoods and portions of the town said, how do we get those?
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Right. I think the idea does catch on, and if you build support with the public, I think they go along with it, but it seems like the places that I've looked at, if you kind of impose it on them and they don't know it's coming, then they're people get more suspicious. And I think it probably varies by part of the country, too. I was thinking one of the things, I think it's Milwaukee, I don't know if you've been up there, but one of the things they're wanting to do or perhaps have already done, they want to require that, and you probably know about some of these things in England, they want to require that, like in a bar, that you have cameras that can be watched by the police.
Hmm.
That if somebody gets, you know, intoxicated and takes off in the parking lot, that you can get them, right away.
Yeah, we had it took us a number of years to have where you couldn't have an open container in an automobile in Texas. So in Texas, we're still a little bit of independent.
Right, I remember that, and I think the law is the law still down there that you have to see, an officer has to see you take it to your lips, right?
Well, not necessarily.
Oh, is that right? Okay, I thought that was the law. Well, my daughter was there, she was a newspaper reporter in Waco, and I think in the 80s, mid-80s or something, you could actually drink and drive, right?
Oh, sure, you could have an open container, and the concern was where the person would pass it off to the passenger in the back seat. At one time, it couldn't be in the passenger compartment, or it couldn't be in the front seat, and they called it the pass-off law, so all they do is hand it to the passenger in the back. But now you can't have an open container in the passenger compartment of the vehicle. You certainly cannot consume it, even if you're a passenger.
I think I remember hearing this up in Montana, that they measured distance up there by six-packs.
Big state.
Interesting place. What can citizens have some type of input on this? Is there a place for them to have an involvement in this other than I see cities around the country are saying, we're going to involve the citizens in developing policies for these cameras. Is that a role for citizens, or is that something that just...
Sure, sure. You know, in the democratic society we live in, absolutely. I worked a number of years ago to amend our open records law to shield our first responders' response plans. There, up until the time the law was changed, the public could do a Freedom of Information request. They could find out the phone numbers of the police officers. They could look at their emergency plans, where their staging areas were, etc. And that law was changed as a result of Mark Stallo. He's the one that recommended that we change that law, and we kind of, you know, it was a bright idea, one of those V8 moments where you hit yourself on the forehead and said, I wish I'd have thought of that. Well, that was Mark's idea, and we took it to our legislature and changed it. Well, where I'm going with this is through that process, we had the University of Texas come in and, you know, talk about some privacy issues and the ACLU and the Statesman, the newspaper there in Austin. And absolutely. And the same thing is dealt with here in Dallas, you know, through our public safety committee, through our city council, that the public can certainly get involved. And there's no substitution for you know, knowing who your elected officials are and holding them accountable.
You know, one of the things I had a graduate student do as a research project, it was really his idea, but I kind of helped him with it. He went and mapped out in Columbus, Ohio, 200 different cameras, public, private, different types of locations. And, you know, he studied the type of cameras so he'd be able to identify them. And, of course, some people helped him identify them. And I was surprised at the, even in Columbus, the number of these. I mean, there's a very good chance. I mean, we're not, I think the average Brit gets photographed about 450, 500 times a day. But we're up there in 100, 150, I think. Would you think?
Oh, absolutely. In from your ATM card to the bank, you can. There's just, it's just countless times that a person's is they're being monitored.
I'll just ask you straight up: is Google a CIA front organization?
Well.
Must know about us, right?
Well, let's just talk about something else.
You know, I had a news story here tonight, and perhaps we can finish with this, but the OnStar system, you know, General Motors is going to go expand the idea using OnStar. And I remember hearing about the LoJack car theft business when I was first in Dallas, but apparently with this Lone Star, what they're going to do, you probably saw the story too, is they're going to be able to, a person can report a car stolen,
yes,
and then the police will notify OnStar, and not, I said Lone Star, OnStar, and then what OnStar can do will shut off the car.
Yeah, it'll have a kill switch on it, and you know, they've done that through the years in narcotics investigations and things, that you can electronically, you know, throw a kill switch on a car.
Uh-huh.
On some bait cars now for
right,
stolen cars. But just look at what's all of us are carrying now. You have a telephone that has GPS capability, so we're able to triangulate you in most cases to know where you're at. You know, the individual has the opportunity to take a still or motion photographs.
Uh-huh.
Technology is really leapfrogging.
Oh, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? And, boy, you're caught up and you're right in the middle of it. It must be exciting to be working on this.
I'm very fortunate, and I'm really blessed to work with professionals like Mark Stallo.
He's a good man, that's for sure. Well, Danny, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. And if you don't mind, we've got this thing archived here in a few minutes. And if I'd like to use it in a couple classes, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure.
And I think it's a good story that people ought to know about, and we appreciate you taking your time out tonight and using some cell phone minutes and contributing to our knowledge in this particular area. So thank you very much, and if we can do anything for you up this way, you let me know.
You're very welcome, and thank you.
All right, thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wasn't that interesting. How in the world could you get a better picture of it, but talk to somebody that actually is involved in it. And I see Audrey, she's waving her arms and saying it's time for us to go. So, folks, we'll be seeing you again next week. Look on the website to see who's going to be on. It'll be another interesting show. And, again, we want to thank Danny Chandler for coming with us tonight. What a good story about public and private surveillance camera work. Good night, folks. We'll see you next week. We'll meet again.
Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again on sunny day. Smiling through just like you always do. Till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know. Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go,